Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the ongoing evolution of what we call consciousness and who we are becoming as a global civilization. And a lot of that has to do with our interactions with other beings, other possibilities, other consciousnesses. And one of my heroes, one of the people that I admire and look up to and has been for me, a guiding light in that field, let's call it UFOs and ET contact, is John Mack. And as people may know, John died a few years ago, but his memory and his legacy live on, and his place within UFO research lives on because he was a psychiatrist at the Harvard University, I mean, a professor of psychiatry there and a psychiatrist. And he gave a legitimacy to understanding this UFO phenomenon and ET abductions. And I'm talking tonight to Denise David Williams, who's doing a movie about John Mack's life. It's now in production. Welcome, Denise.
Hi. Hi, Alan. Nice to talk to you.
Right. I'm very happy you're going forward with this project. It's going to be the story of John Mack's life. I mean, that was a little brief understanding of John. And I knew John. I met with him. I really think he is the person that did give a sort of legitimacy to this whole field, even though many, many people have had experiences. It wasn't until John came forward and said, "I don't think these people are crazy. There's something to that story," that I think there was a larger mainstream that considered the possibility of this. So tell me your relationship to that whole area and how you found John Mack. Can you tell me that?
Sure. John had actually, I actually didn't know who John Mack was until a year after he was killed. And I came upon his, knowing about him in a very sort of synchronistic series of events. Someone told me his story, and 2 minutes into hearing about him, I had chills, and I was like, I have to shepherd this story to the big screen. So I spent over 4 years tracking down his family, creating a relationship with his family, gaining their trust, and convincing them that I had very sincere intentions to tell this story with integrity, and that they should grant my company the life rights to tell Dr. Mack's story. And so they did. So really, we've been on this journey now for going on 7 years, because as I said, it took 4.5 years to get the rights, and then we spent a lot of time researching and developing relationships with his colleagues and his friends all over the world, which he has many, many of them. He's really quite beloved in a lot of circles. So
But why were you so passionate about, I mean, what was it that sparked something in you? What was it in you that excited you about this story?
yeah, you know, to be honest, I've always had a very highly developed intuition. And when you have a very highly developed intuition, you have all kinds of experiences that are, let's say, beyond the physical. And so when I looked into John's work, I really felt that I understood what he was saying on a deep level. And I really felt that I could be a great champion for him. I understood that he was going for a more nuanced assessment of the whole phenomenon. You know, that he was going deeper than this is something that's happening in our physical world, and it's scary and it's terrifying. And, you know, a lot of researchers just take it at face value. But I identified and empathized with John Mack that he wanted to take it further, that it was more nuanced and a more spiritual point of view, if you will. I know that's a very controversial word sometimes,
No.
spiritual, but that is what John, that was his approach. You know,
Well,
he, that is,
yeah.
yeah.
No, I get what you're saying when you say nuance. It's really, I think what John brought to the table and through his work as a psychiatrist and someone who investigated realms of consciousness just in, you know, distorted behavior or like pathological situations is that what accompanies behavior is a state of consciousness. And what John was bringing to the whole UFO abduction scenario was that there's states of consciousness that seem to accompany these experiences. So in a sense, they don't take place in this normal reality, because when you encounter these beings, something shifts. He would say people experienced ontological shock. That's a term he used, because because reality is not what we thought it was, and when we realize that it's not that, the whole being goes into trauma. I think that's such an important point, and I think that's what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the term he used, ontological shock. It actually was something, it was the very nature of our existence was called into question over these experiences. And, you know, what John said, which was different from other researchers, is, and it was the thing that Harvard was so up in arms over, was that in order to truly understand this phenomenon, we had to redefine our definition of reality. And so we in the Western world, we're very resistant to that. We're one of the few cultures that are so resistant to that. We think if we don't feel something, we don't see something, that it doesn't exist. And John had the courage to say, come on, there's something greater. Let's contemplate the possibility that there are other dimensions besides this three-dimensional existence that we live in this physical world. And to many, including myself, that made him like a modern-day Galileo, because he just got so much, so many people, including Harvard, came up against him because of that.
Right, and I think, I mean, along those lines, I think it was so important, his early associations with Thomas Kuhn, who wrote the book, The Structure of Scientific Revolution, saying that new ideas or new ways of looking at reality create a paradigm, and if your view is not in the current paradigm, then you're ostracized, you're outside what's accepted, and these views that seem to go along with our definitions of reality are in a sense always changing, and it takes a new paradigm, a scientific power. Paradigm to bring in a whole new set of possibilities, what's been called anomalies. What's an anomaly in one paradigm, a way of thinking, is accepted in a more evolved paradigm. Do you get into that at all in your research with John?
Yes, absolutely. Thomas Kuhn, who, as you said, he defined the term paradigm shift. He was the first to coin that term. Was John's mentor. Right. And he said to John in no uncertain terms, people are very resistant to change of any kind, let alone a paradigm shift. And that is really what John Mack called for, that we shift our idea of our reality, which is huge, but...
Right. It's so huge that people don't realize how big that is. I mean, reality is more solid than the ground beneath our feet. That's how big our view of reality is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a wonderful, wonderful quote that I think applies perfectly to what we're talking about. All truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. And third, it is accepted as self-evident. And I think that's exactly what
Arthur
John,
Schopenhauer, that's one of my
favorite
quotes. That's
right, Arthur Schopenhauer.
And I use that all the time when I talk about UFOs and I talk about things like crop circles. And, you know, the fact that it's being ridiculed, according to Terence McKenna, is a good sign that it's well on its way to being accepted. You know,
exactly. Yeah, that's the positive side to it.
Well, we'll get a little more into the idea behind the film production, but I want people to hear a little bit who are you're not familiar with John Mack. Doug, at the station, if you go to that URL I sent you, right at the top it has John Mack. I'm talking about the URL, makingmagicproductions.com.
Makemagicproductions.com.
That's Denise's website about the production of this John Mack film. And right at the top, Doug, there's this Listen to John Mack 20 Seconds. Is it possible to play that so we can hear John's words? Are you with me, Doug?
If something doesn't fit our notions of reality, and yet the people that are having an experience are of sound mind, or sincere, or nothing to gain, or in effect opening to other realities, then it seems to me the responsibility of academicians as well as theologians is to begin to question our notions of reality.
Right. That's just a little sample of John, I would say his intellectual stance in understanding a phenomena that appears to be real but doesn't fit into what we call normal reality. And so as far as making a movie about this and this understanding, it's not just about John Mack you're making the movie. It seems like you're making a movie about how we define reality. Is that true?
Well, we're making a movie. Yes, that is true. We're making a movie about the 12 or 14 years of John's life where he stumbled upon this work. He didn't go looking for it, so he was really an unwilling hero, and he couldn't turn away from it. He became curious what the psychiatric syndrome might be. So he started to study abductees when he was asked to. At first he said no, and then he agreed. And he studied over 200 of them, and he was embarrassed to study them at his office at Harvard, so he studied them in his son's bedroom at home. And he was, this is kind of the arc of the movie, and he was really shocked with his findings, which were, in his opinion, the abductees were not lying and they were not crazy. He said, "I know mental illness, and this is not mental illness." So he traveled the world to corroborate the stories he had heard home. He went to Africa and met with African shamans. He met with Australian Aborigines. And they were telling the same stories, abduction stories, that he was hearing back home. And he said, when an African bushman and an upscale New England housewife are telling the same abduction stories, we have to take the conversation seriously. So he wrote a book. He put his findings in a best-selling book called Abduction, and he went on a media tour. And when Harvard heard about it, they were mortified that their head of psychiatry was on television saying that aliens were real. And so Harvard Medical School convened a secret committee to try to discredit him, to take away his tenure and ruin his reputation. So they basically put him on trial. It was about a 14-month witch hunt. And ultimately, John was granted his academic freedom, but he really paid a very high price. His wife divorced him.
His it sounded like his wife was very supportive of him, you know?
Yeah, she started out being very supportive. But as he started to see abductee after abductee in his home, as she describes in that clip, she really, like, after several years, really couldn't take it anymore. It really affected their standing in Cambridge society, and it became very difficult for her.
Well, so, I'm just curious. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
And then he comes up against Harvard, so that's huge conflict in the film that he is a real hero's journey. He comes up against this great institution, Harvard University, and so that's a part of the story. And then
he won the case at Harvard, right? He actually did.
You
win.
Know,
he
it did. Was a Pyrrhic victory, so to speak.
Oh, I thought he convinced them, not that alien abductions were true, but that these people have a legitimate right to tell them their experience, that their experience was true. We don't know what it was, but that's not what happened, you said?
The dean eventually granted him academic freedom, and the dean wanted it off the campus. He wanted to shut it down. He felt that he had, you know, made his point to John. They said to him, John, if only you had said you had discovered a new psychiatric syndrome instead of asking us to redefine reality. So they you know, basically gave him a slap on the wrist after 14 months of what amounted to a witch hunt. So they really put him through the ringer and then said, okay, just whatever, it's over. We don't want to talk about it anymore. So that's what happened, but it did a lot of damage to his mm-hmm. reputation and to his career.
Well, it also gave him quite a, a jumping off point into a much bigger forum than just being a psychiatric professor. You know, it brought him on national television. Maybe it wasn't great for his academic career, but for his public career, it was quite a launching pad.
But you have to understand, he didn't want a launching pad for his career. Right. He was a Pulitzer Prize winning author. He was already world renowned. He did not want anything for himself. He was a very humble man, very compassionate, and he was doing this strictly because he felt that these people needed a champion, and he was going to be the champion. So all the publicity and all the notoriety was something he didn't even like, but it came with the territory of defending the abductees.
So what else happens? After the trial, then where does the film go from there?
Well, the
arc.
The specific beats of the story are, you know, we have them a bit under wraps, but basically it's, okay, you know, the beginning, middle, and end of the story, where he starts to work, he comes up against Harvard, and then what happens in the third act, unfortunately, is he is killed in London. He's run over by a speeding car in 2004.
But that was years later. That was after actually some of the abduction work had already died down. It wasn't as popular as it was in the mid-90s when he came out with the book. I mean,
That's true. Absolutely.
But so you take it there. But getting back to Harvard a little bit, Harvard has a great track record for coming up against these sort of radicals. There was William James at the turn of the 20th century, and of course Timothy Leary and Richard Albert Ramdas were challenging Harvard with LSD. Do you make that comparison between Mac and Leary and James at all?
Well, other people have made that comparison. Alan Dershowitz, I don't know if you're familiar, but he said a great quote in defense of John in the New York Times. He said, "Isn't it interesting at an esteemed place of higher learning such as Harvard that angels are okay, but aliens are not? You could walk across campus and go to the theology department, and you're totally cool with Harvard. But when you start talking about aliens, then, you know, they shut him down." So to your question, yes, I think John definitely could be compared to William James and Timothy Leary, but much braver. I mean, because he really stuck his neck out.
Right. I mean, looking at William James, you know, William James did say that there were other states of consciousness, and he sort of coined the word, I think, stream of consciousness almost. And he, but yes, I mean, he was different, but very similar in the sense that Harvard being the academic institution that sort of qualifies reality is suddenly challenged once again by, what is this? What is consciousness? I think it's really fascinating that John is in that company with these other revolutionaries, in a sense.
Totally. But then think about how much further he took it, just to put himself on the line, even to use the word alien. I mean, to use the word consciousness is a much more polite way to talk about the area in much more accepted way, in much more sort of erudite way. But when you start talking about alien abductions, then you've gone into a whole nother realm. You've got this esteemed psychiatrist and Pulitzer Prize winner who's basically saying, in some realm, in some way, this is an authentic mystery and it's really happening. That's taking it many steps further than, let's just talk about consciousness.
Well, I agree. And I think what John did, like I said before, legitimize the whole thing. But yet, now we're really 94 is when the abduction book came out. And here we are 20 years later. It's still an uphill battle to make sense of this idea of aliens. How far have we really come since John's breakthrough work? I'm asking you just sort of off the record from the movie itself. I'm just curious what you're thinking.
Yeah, I totally agree. How I see it is that this, and I have to refer to the film because it's symbolic that it's time to reignite the conversation. I don't think it's any accident that now this film is entering into the public dialogue, and all of us involved in it feel like we are picking up the torch and continuing on behalf of Dr. Mack's work. And Peter, who was a young man who was he was an abductee. He worked with John. He went on the speaking circuit with John 20 years ago. He's come back around, and you'll see a testimony that he gives on johnmackmovie.com. And he even says, it's time to reignite the conversation 20 years later. The world wasn't totally ready for it back in the 90s, but it's ready for it now.
I think you're right. I think it is ready. And I'm actually, doing my own little piece on that, writing piece about how I think like now is the time for this awakening to come forward.
Yes. Exactly.
Just going back to Alan Dershowitz, why is he known? Why is that name popular?
Alan Dershowitz is and was a law professor at Harvard, and he's quite vocal still. He's a quite well-known attorney, and I believe he's still at Harvard as a law professor.
No, but he's out there in the public in a big way, right? I mean, he's known for a lot more than just being a professor at Harvard, I think.
Yeah, he's very vocal about academic freedoms and freedoms of all kinds. I mean, I'm not an expert on Alan Dershowitz, but I do know that he was outraged when he heard that Harvard had formed a secret committee, and he splashed it all over. He wrote an editorial to bring it out into the open, and that's how the committee, knowledge of the committee went public. So he was a defender of John in that sense.
Well, we can talk more about John, and I'd like to. I just want to get to the project itself, the movie, and what you're doing that's different than normal Hollywood movies, because you said that Hollywood, in a sense, isn't ready for this. And so you've taken it in a different direction. Can you talk about that?
Sure. What I actually said, and based on my experience, I've been in the industry for 25 years, and there really is a great amount of interest in Hollywood and many companies that I spoke with to do a story about John Mack. But what I found in the last year or so was that the people that I were talking with wanted to take the story in a direction that was not the vision for the film that I had discussed with the family, that I have discussed with the abductees, and that I felt really did service to the subject matter as well as John Mack's life. So that is why, based on several conversations with close friends of John's and just my own feeling about it, we decided to put together a campaign for the development phase of the film, meaning we are raising independent funds so that we can develop the script in-house and then package it and, you know, do it in a more traditional way. But this is the only way right now that we can see that we can develop a script that we that reflects our vision of the film. Because you can imagine, there can be a lot of ways to sell John Mack's story and really make it very silly or buffoonish or cynical.
Sensational.
Yeah. And we don't want to do that. Because we feel that if it's done right, it could really touch the hearts and minds of people all over the world. So,
done right in
what
sense?
Yeah.
I mean, how would you, what do you mean when you say do it right? I mean, how, what's your approach? What will your approach be to the film?
Well, that's a good question. Our intention is to tell his story with, obviously, it's entertainment. I mean, there's no doubt that it's entertainment. This is not a documentary. It's going to be a film. You go to the theater, you sit down, you have your popcorn, and you have a great experience in the theater. But our intention is that it's more, there's more to it than that, that we are able to convey and you know, ideally spark a dialogue about the real possibility that we're not alone in the universe. I mean, if we can just have a serious, sincere conversation about that, how great would that be to shifting the paradigm that we currently live with? And I think that's John Mack's legacy. That's his legacy.
Yeah, I totally agree. So it's obvious that you, I mean, you obviously believe that we're not alone in the universe as just a person. Would you say that? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. And I've experienced not an alien abduction, but I've experienced multi-dimensional experiences, and any of us, I think, actually, Alan, I think there are so many of us who are in the closet about experiences we've had, metaphysical experiences, whatever our own personal experiences. I think most of us have had them. It's, do we acknowledge them? Are we aware of them? But we're all intuitive beings. It's just, to what degree do we tune into that intuition? And that's what John said. You know, John went from being he was an atheist, had a very materialistic worldview, and in his own words, he became a heart-based, intuitive, spiritual man. And isn't that where the planet, isn't that what the awakening is all about, of the planet?
Yeah.
That's what I think.
No, I totally agree, and who would you want to, just, I'm just curious, play John Mack, if you could pick anybody?
Well, this is an incredible role for an actor. I mean, it's really, it's like playing Lincoln, you know, it's just a real hero's journey. So there are a handful of wonderful movie star actors who would be incredible. Daniel Day-Lewis, George Clooney, Tom Hanks, maybe John Hamm. It all depends. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
When we have the script and we look at the script and we start talking, you know, in-house, then we take that next step of, you know, who's the lucky actor who's going to get to play this part? That's how we see it.
Right. So right now you're developing a script and you are raising money. Tell people, let me just, so I have to get a glass of water, but tell people a little bit how to donate money, okay?
Sure. Sure. If you go to johnmackmovie.com, you'll see a short, hopefully entertaining video about what it is that we're doing and what it is that we need, and any contribution is sincerely appreciated to help us move forward into the next step, which is to hire a writer and to develop the script.
So you gave the website, right?
Yeah, johnmackmovie.com.
And how much can people donate, or how much would you like?
They can donate, I'd like about $1 million. No,
okay,
seriously, we, you know, donate whatever. We appreciate anything you feel to donate, we sincerely appreciate. It all helps.
So it could be $10 even.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally.
Okay. So the website again is to donate.
JohnMacMovie.com.
Okay. And right there you can go. And how do people donate? Do they send you like a PayPal thing or?
Yeah, it's real simple. It's very, very easy to donate. You just put in your $10, $25, whatever it is that you want to donate. And it's very simple, JohnMacMovie.com.
And what do people get? I mean, do they get anything for donating or just like?
Sure.
What would they get?
Yes, there are perks we're offering. If you donate a certain dollar amount, we're giving a copy of Abduction, John's best-selling book, Abduction, or a copy of his incredible book, Passport to the Cosmos. We also have a really cool DVD about crop circles that John was involved in. At a higher donation, we have these incredible collector's items books called Alien Discussions. It's a collection of the MIT conference that John Mack and MIT professor David Pritchard co-chaired in 1992. And it's an incredible coffee table book. It's a great gift. So we're also giving that at a certain donation level. And there are other perks as well.
Actually, I have a copy of that book, and it is an amazing book. It's the first real academic study of the alien abduction phenomenon, and that happened at MIT in what year was that?
That was in 92.
And it's really well written. It's well put together. These are academic people, and I'm also
Ellen, I think I lost you. Ellen? Ellen?
Oh, yes. Oh,
okay. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no. Hello, do you hear me? Is that better?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay. No, I just said I was surprised nothing followed up on that MIT conference. I think you said now it's time. What has changed between now, like in the consciousness of the planet that you think this story will be more acceptable and people will be more open to this possibility of an alien encounter than they were 20 years ago?
Well, we have happily evolved in a lot of areas. I mean, use as a parallel example, gay marriage. I mean, 20 years ago, could we have imagined that that would start to become almost mainstreamly accepted? And, you know,
yeah.
It's just where we're headed. You know, it's the natural evolution of our planet, in my humble opinion, that it's time to start expanding what we know, what we think is reality. We're very limited. You know, our thinking is very limited. And the conversations, if you're on the internet, I mean, the conversations are more open. The stigma of talking about metaphysical experiences is really transformed. And, you know, it's not, you don't have to whisper when you talk about these things anymore. So
right.
It's time.
And you're right. People are in the closet about their metaphysical experience, about their multidimensional, about their alien contact. I mean, they're embarrassed, and of course they've been ridiculed, and it is similar to the whole gay marriage thing where that was not out in the open, and now, you know, people are getting married at City Hall. So this is a much I think more radical idea in a sense than, because what happens, there's an effect on a planetary level when we acknowledge that there's the other. You know, I think it's the philosopher Hegel talks about the other, confronting the other as a shadow part of ourselves. And when we realize that there are others, it changes the planetary consciousness. Well, in a sense, it unifies us as a civilization, and maybe there's a lot of political factions that are not ready for that unifying awareness. That's what I get.
I totally agree. You know, and John talked about the connecting. Well, let me say this: the people who had the abduction experiences, often once John helped them get past the terrifying, traumatic aspect of it, you know, like the shamanic journey where you jump off a cliff in order to get past your fears, but then you're spiritually transformed. When John helped people get to that other side, they felt an incredible kinship to the planet, to other human beings, and to the universe at large. So if we as a planet acknowledge that we're not alone in the universe, the connectivity that is possible, it's mind-boggling. You know, considering we live on a planet that is so divided, if we can start moving toward connectivity, you know, that's true evolution. That's true spiritual evolution.
I agree. And the connectivity, I think, is what you brought up earlier and what John brought up, is that reality is not what we think it is. It's not fragmented. The human being is much bigger than the ideas we've been conditioned to believe. I'll read this thing that John says on your website here. I've come to realize this alien encounter phenomenon forces us, if we permit ourselves to take it seriously, to re-examine our perception of human identity, to look at who we are from a cosmic perspective. And I think he also says, these phenomena tell us many things about ourselves and the universe that challenge the dominant materialistic paradigm. You sort of said that earlier. They reveal that our understanding of reality is extremely limited. The cosmos is more mysterious than we've imagined, and that there are other intelligences all about, some of which may be able to reach us, and our knowledge of the properties of the physical world is far from complete. And our knowledge of the physical world is far from complete. And I think this, the resistance to this is that it challenges the establishment that they don't have it all together, like an establishment like Harvard or the materialistic Newtonian scientific paradigm that says the world is purely material. They are such a stake in that. In that understanding, that to let that go means to realize that science doesn't have all the answers. I think that's exactly.
People, you know, we don't like to change. We don't like change as a species. You know, we like to hold on, but it's inevitable. It's going to happen, no matter how hard the scientific community holds on, or it will happen. You know, it's just how turbulent is it going to be? But it's happening as we speak. The spiritual evolution is happening.
It is happening. And worldwide, people are having experiences. I wanted to play that other clip from the website that you have, Make Magic Productions, where John talks to the students in Zimbabwe. And I haven't heard that, but I wanted to hear it listening on the show so I can have an initial reaction. This was a famous case where I think it was, 16 students, what were they, 12,
62,
10,
52
eight-year-olds saw a ship, a spacecraft, an alien ship land, and these beings came out, and in Zimbabwe, Africa, and John went there to talk to the students at that school to find out for himself what they saw, and it's a remarkable case that I don't think enough has been done with that case. It's just been brushed aside.
Well, that'll be part of the movie, but that will definitely be in the film.
Well, I think that's a major importance, that these children all had the same experience and they drew pictures. So here's a little clip of John himself talking to one of the students in Zimbabwe. Do you see that on the website there, Doug? Let's see if play this. Listen to John Mack. If you're on the right side of the website, listen to John Mack interview a student in Zimbabwe. It's about 1 minute long. Do you see that? It's right under "Should we beam them up?" Do you see it, Doug? Somewhere? Doug, are you there? Hello? Maybe I could play it.
Lost Doug.
Oh, you see, are you still on the website there, the Make Magic Productions website? Well, you see it has a New York Times John Mack thing, and then you have, scroll down on the right side, it says, should Harvard beam him up? And then under that, it has, listen to John Mack interview a student in Zimbabwe.
Okay, got it.
Let's try that.
I don't know. Let me just see if this will play.
Okay.
He was just staring, mm-hmm. and we, like, tried not to look at him, because he was quite scary.
What was scary about him?
His big eyes, I think. I think they want people to know that we're actually making harm on this world and we mustn't get too technologized.
What gave you that feeling?
I don't know.
But it came through to you when you were with the strange being?
Yeah. When he was looking at me.
When he was looking at you?
Yeah. It came through my head.
Did it, like, through words or?
My conscience, I think.
Your what?
My conscience.
It came to you through your conscience told you?
Well, the thing was looking at me.
While it was looking at you, your conscience told you that. Had you been a person that had thought a lot about what we're doing to the earth before that?
No, only after this.
Only after this.
Denise?
Yeah.
No, that clip brings up a lot of the a lot of the ideas that happen in an encounter. First, there's this trauma. There's, like, you're meeting a being that doesn't look or feel anything like us, and that's shocking for a lot of people. And then they go through a sort of post-traumatic syndrome effect when they have an encounter. And there's also the telepathic experiences that many abductees have, and that's also something that seems to not be understood by us as human beings. And then, of course, there's this idea that many abductees feel that they get from the ETs that we're here to take care of the Earth, and that we haven't done a great job in taking care of the Earth. So, so what do you want to bring out if you have a scene or so in the movie? What elements of that would you like to bring out of, like, this encounter with these children in Zimbabwe, John's interaction?
Well, that's definitely part of the story, because it's for several reasons. One, John got a call at the height of the Harvard trial. He got a call from BBC correspondent Tim Leach, who has since passed away, and he wanted a statement from John about it was called the aerial school sighting in Zimbabwe, and John hadn't heard about it. So John, very happy to get out of Dodge, gets on a plane and goes down to Zimbabwe and interviews these children. The clip is of what we just heard, and it really was very validating for John at a time when he was being put through the ringer by Harvard to go down there and have these children who were so credible and so sincere. Tim Leach, who was a war correspondent and pretty hard, hard-nosed reporter, kind of melted because he was filming the whole thing and he couldn't believe what he was hearing from these children as John interviewed them. So that's very dramatic. That will definitely be in the film. And it was very validating for John to, have these children report this.
Do you think the alien interactions have stopped or have lessened? It seemed like the 80s and 90s were quite rich times for something like that going on. It doesn't seem like there's so much of that happening now in the same way. Do you think the phenomenon has changed?
That's a good question. From what I've asked abductees and had that conversation with people who know better than I do about those things, you're right. They seem to have kind of slowed down a bit. But why, or I have no clue, why that is. I really don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what I think it is. I think the, well, starting probably in the 60s with the Betty and Barney Hill case, that was really the first main, do you make reference to them in the movie at all?
Actually, Ellen, an astrophysicist, a friend of John's told me, was that the first sighting was right after World War II, when we bombed Japan, is when the very first abduction occurred, and when the first crash was, I think that's when Roswell happened. And
yeah, 47,
the connection
yeah.
being that we were about to destroy our planet, and they showed up to try to prevent that. The nuclear
well, actually,
weapons
the,
and all
the
of
first
that.
Sightings in the U.S. were really in the 1890s. They called that the Great Airship Flap. If you look at Jerome Clark's book on the history of UFOs, he traces it back to there. And
if you read about go ahead.
No, David Jacobs also traces some abductions back to the 1890s. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, if you actually go back to our founding fathers, they were very metaphysically oriented. You can look in the Library of Congress and see that John Adams, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson all talked about experiences with other beings. It's not really common knowledge. So that's extraordinary when you think about it.
Well, that's interesting. But I was going to say, I'm sure there's been a long history of interactions with beings, but it seems like there was some kind of breeding program where they were taking human genetics, the aliens, and interspersing it with their genetics, creating a hybrid. And I think that's what the cattle mutilations were about. These are just my own opinions. And they had to incubate these hybrids they were manufacturing for some reason. And I have my own theories, is that they were trying to mix the human emotion with this incredible intellect that these aliens had to create a new race. And so I think that what I'm, you know, hypothesizing that perhaps that level of experimentation came through. They created these hybrids, and that the abductions are not happening in the same way because they're not needing the human genetics in the same way. That's my theory about why the phenomena may have changed. But
mm-hmm. I've heard that. I've definitely heard that. And John Mack talks about that in his book Abduction.
Mm-hmm. He talks about the genetic material being taken.
Exactly.
And that's shocking for somebody, you know, laying on a table. And I think what John helped people with is getting through the trauma of that encounter.
Yeah. And, you know, he used a great analogy. I think it's so powerful. He said, when a parent takes a baby to the doctor to get vaccinated, the doctor sticks the baby with a needle, the baby cries, and from the level of consciousness of the baby, it's really kind of a horrible thing. But from a higher perspective, those of the doctor and the parents, it's really for the baby's well-being. And John used that analogy for what the aliens were doing to humans. Very provocative. You know, I mean, it's easy for us to say that when we're not the ones on the table being probed, but it is pretty provocative to think of it from that perspective.
I mean, I do think I may have had, I mean, who knows, if you listen to the Roper poll, 1 out of 4 or 5 people have had some kind of alien contact. I think I've had something, but it's not in this level of reality. I mean, that's what's also so important about John's work, is that he helps us define realities in terms of these encounters, which are of a non-normal nature, of a non-ordinary nature, I guess is that a
right.
way of saying.
Right, right. He said it was a crossover experience. I mean, initially, he thought it was a physical experience, the same as other researchers like Bud Hopkins mm-hmm. or David Jacobs. You know, it's happening here in our physical world, and, you know, we can't explain it. But after several years, he came to believe that it was really a crossover experience from another dimension. And that's why there was never going to be any real physical evidence, because it was impossible crossing back and forth through dimensions to leave physical physical evidence.
But there is physical yeah. evidence. There's people have these scoop marks. I think that it is physical and non and a crossover at the same time. I think when you shift reality, this world or this is not what we think it is. And so even though maybe it may seem non-physical in a certain sense, it's physical on another level of our own consciousness. So I think it's both physical and non-physical, but I think what we call physical reality is not what we think it is what I want to say.
Right. It's more than we think it is, a lot more.
So right. I think these abductions and these encounters are physical, but when you meet these beings, there's something that shifts in our consciousness that distorts the reality we live in and makes it almost seem unreal. And I think that's also why people have spiritual awakenings, because they realize there's more to their consciousness than we've been conditioned to think.
Yeah, exactly. A lot more. You know, so much more, we can't even imagine how much more.
Right, and I think these aliens, like John says in a way, well, he's this great quote, I mean, he said this in other places, that the alien encounter experience seems almost like an outreach program from the cosmos for the consciously impaired. I think that's
That's great.
It is a great quote, and that was the kind of humor that John had, and the intelligence and the spiritual sophistication that I would love for you to bring out in any movie about him.
And that is exactly our intention. You nailed it, Alan. That's exactly it. And that's why we are extremely protective of the story, because we want it to be, again, entertainment, but spiritually sophisticated. And that's a tricky, you know, that's tricky.
Yeah, it takes a great actor. It does take like a Daniel Day-Lewis to have that internal composure and state of awareness to confront the subtleties of this kind of encounter experience. I mean, I think one of the great moments is where John goes from seeing this is just totally ridiculous, and then somehow there's a shift where he starts to take these people seriously. I mean, what is that moment, if you can just, you know, relay that moment of what happened to him?
Well, yeah, in reality, it was more gradual. I mean, he studied over 200 abductees, and then he comes home, as we heard in that clip, he says to his wife, I know mental illness, and this is not mental illness. So at that point, he's all of a sudden, the shift has taken place in him. And as a movie moment, that's going to be incredible. Mm-hmm. What's going to be important is that the audience believes that John believes. That's crucial in the telling of this story. We're not trying to proselytize and get anybody to believe or not believe, but our job as filmmakers is to that we believe that John Mack believes, because then we go on the journey with him, the incredible journey that he went on from atheist, you know, materialistic guy to spiritual, intuitive, heart-based, compassionate man who championed abductees in spite of all that he came up against.
Well, that is such a, that you're right. That is like a major critical moment, I think, in the film. And I'm just curious about his internal process. So here he thinks all this is ridiculous. And still today, pretty much anyone you say, I think I was abducted by aliens, will roll their eyes and just laugh at you. And here's a psychiatrist who's a professor at Harvard who's confronted with this. And, of course, he thinks it's ridiculous. But then he starts to talk to these people and he realizes that there is something about experience. And he says that in lots of interviews, the quality of experience or the primacy of experience. He says that you cannot argue with someone else's experience, especially when they are, functional as human beings. So he starts to somehow open up to the idea that maybe this is possible, and maybe this is true for them, and there's something about reality which we haven't considered before. And I think that's the moment that we have to take as a civilization, you know?
Right, right. It was very, very painful for him. I mean, you can imagine, why would he, like he said, this is not a club that anyone would want to belong to. And, you know, it's extremely painful. And you know, there actually was data that he found. Harvard was upset that John hadn't conferred with any of his Harvard colleagues. So he went to the psychology department and brought a couple abductees with him, and who agreed to submit to a battery of tests. And what they did was they put an abductee in a booth and hooked them up to electrodes and read them a happy story, a scary story, a neutral story, and then one of their abduction stories. And what they found was that the physiological responses to the telling of the abduction story measured off the charts, way more than Vietnam vets, way more than rape victims. And that the one thing in the psychiatric community that is agreed upon is that you cannot fake physiological responses to trauma. And so John actually had the data, but his colleagues in the psychology department said, well, we choose to interpret the data differently because alien abduction is impossible. So when he could have been vindicated with real hard data, they wouldn't do it. So, you know, he really is such a hero. He was so brave that he continued literally till his death to champion people who really needed someone with his
potential. No, I think he is a great hero, and I think it is a hero's journey. And I think in that situation, John, I mean, who knows, but he made a choice. Put people in a box and tell them their experience isn't real, or do you expand your own qualifications about the nature of reality, and you consider perhaps there's something more than I know, and open up to new possibilities? I mean, what we're all in now is the paradigm shifts to a more spiritual reality. Do we understand ourselves as limited material beings, or do we consider the fact that maybe we're eternal non-material beings?
Exactly. And do we become willing to grow like John did? You know, John was a great example. He became willing to risk everything and grow. And that's really our choice as well as individuals. Do we choose to grow, or do we choose to stay stuck where we are?
And I think it's people's choice as they watch this movie. Well, what is really going on there? Do I consider the possibility that these abductions are real, or do I say, no, it's impossible, and I'm just kind of close the door on what I think is true? Or do I open up to say, maybe I don't know everything?
Whether it's one, two, or three of what you just listed, how great that the conversation is taking place, no matter what your position is, you know? So that's why we really sincerely are asking if people can donate $10, $15, $20, whatever it is, to help us develop the script the way you and I have just discussed, Alan. It would be, you know, really, this film can impact the world. That's how big it is.
Right. I just wanted to add to that one thing, the fact that, you know, it's one, two, or three, but John himself evolved, like you said, through this process. And there's this great quote towards the bottom of your page on the website where he says, "So for me, a journey that began with the investigation of a strange anomaly has led to a greater appreciation of the gift of being and a deeper commitment to helping to preserve the life of the planet and its infinite possibilities." So
beautiful.
Yeah, that was John's transformation through this process of, like you said, going from an atheist and very kind of probably rigid as a psych psychiatric, you know, student, and to understanding that there's much more to the world and to life and to possibilities that lay outside the paradigm that we've been force-fed. And he's one of the leaders of opening up the doorways to the unknown, really. And so
that's
why I support your film, and that's why I encourage people to go to what is the website again?
JohnMacMovie.com.
JohnMacMovie.com, and you'll see there the Indiegogo campaign, and I'm just going to go there right now, and MacMovie.com, and this Indiegogo campaign, is there a time limit to when
people
have to?
Yeah, we have about 40 days to raise our development money.
40 days to raise how much do you need?
We're raising $1 million. So we really want to get as close as we can, as soon as we can.
I see. And you need that. And that's the whole cost of the production, or will you have more money coming in?
No, that's what we need. It's all explained in the video on the website. It's just a short video, but it's explained what that money is for, where it's going, and, you know, where we are in the process of the film.
Well, it's very exciting. I want to see this movie made. And do you have a director in mind as well?
Not yet. But the most important thing, once we have our development money, is to hire a great writer. Because as we know, writing this script is going to take great skill, great intellect, a big heart. I have several writers in mind who I've been speaking with, but first we have to raise the development money.
Are you looking for a writer who's open to these ideas, these possibilities about alien abduction?
I think it's good to bring an open mind to the process. They don't have to be a believer, but it's good to have an open mind.
I mean, it's still a fantastic thing to believe. I mean, I'm pretty sure there are beings out there that are coming and going. But even I'm working through my old paradigm to know that this is a reality. I mean, so I think this is an important movie that needs to be done, because just the very presence that John Mack brought to this situation, and his training, and you know, his intellect, and his ability to communicate, and you know, I saw him speak a couple of times, but one time he said, he quoted Margaret Mead, and he said, Margaret Mead said, this is not, UFOs are not about belief. Do you believe in UFOs? She said, you look at the facts, and are there circumstances to prove the possibility, or they're not? It has nothing to do with belief.
Mm-hmm. So, that's right. That was according to his clinical judgment. It wasn't just belief. As you know, with all his credential and his training, his clinical judgment and assessment said, yes, there's something to be taken seriously here. There's some truth here.
Right, and I think he was also probably influenced, like people like R.D. Lang, who wrote The Politics of Experience, saying, you know, you cannot question someone's experience. If someone says this is true, then that is true for them. And who are we to say something is not true for somebody if this is their experience?
Right, so, but in addition, he proved that they were not hallucinations, they weren't delusions, that they mimicked a real narrative. You know, he was able to prove that. So, you know, he had his training behind his conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Just one thing. I know we've kind of been talking for a while now. He died in 2004, was it? Was it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I personally think it was an accident. He was in England. He probably, you know, when you cross the street in England, it's easy to look the wrong way. Do you have any ideas about that? Any thoughts about?
Well, Well, the family determined that it was exactly as it was reported, and that is that it was a drunk driving accident. You know, as we all know, they drive on the opposite side of the street than we do here. So John stepped into the street, and, you know, he apparently looked the wrong way. But that's the official word, and that's, you know, what I subscribe to.
Right. I mean, there's, of course, there's a lot of conspiracy stuff out there, and people say, you know, they wanted to do people, the higher forces wanted to do away with John. But I don't agree with that. I think, you know, it was way beyond his days of headlines and all that. And I think he was actually moving a little bit away from the phenomenon to other areas, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. That's true. That's true. And, you know, you could look at it this way. This is just, I don't know, this is just a perspective. But if John were still living, I don't think we could be telling his story now. So, you know, in some way, it seems like he had to be gone in order for us to pick up the torch and, you know, carry his legacy forward. That's just, you know, my personal point of view, and it just really cements his heroism to look at it that way as well.
Well, that's probably true. I wonder what he would be doing. I mean, I heard him also speak once on Wilhelm Reich and Wilhelm Reich as an outsider. And have you ever heard that talk about Wilhelm Reich that he did?
Yes, I think I have. Yeah.
Right. So he talked about Reich as an outsider and him as an outsider. And, you know, he had a lot of other interest, but I think this main thing is the story that is what the planet needs at this time. So after 7 years of research, do you feel like you really know who he was? Do you feel a bit close to him in a way?
I do feel close to him. I really feel love for him, to tell you the truth. I admire him, and I feel very protective of him, and very protective of the story that's going to, you know, go into eternity about him. And I'm really quite honored that the Mack family, even though it took 4.5 years, said, okay, you're the one we're going to entrust this story to. So, it's a huge honor and a huge responsibility. And that's why I'm doing it this way, why I've chosen to go this route for development.
Well, thank you so much, Denise, for doing this. I think it's important for a lot of us who believe the reality of what John sort of discovered. I mean, he wasn't the only one, but what he brought to this field was his credentials and his assurance that there's a phenomena that is it's new, it's undetectable, it needs to be integrated into a bigger picture. And if you can make a movie about that, I think it will only help expand who we are around the world. And,
absolutely. So, and you know what? Kudos to everyone who is just willing to keep an open mind. We're not asking anyone to believe in aliens. We're just saying, as John said, let's just keep an open mind.
Let's keep an open mind and know that there's more to reality than we've been told. And I think that's really key, that there's much more to reality than we've been told. And so, if you go to, what is it, John Mack the Movie?
John Mack Movie.
JohnMackMovie.com. And you see the Indiegogo campaign, you can start to donate. It says contribute now there, and Dr. John Mack, A True Story. And that's sort of what you're going to be calling the film, you think, or will you have another title for
right
that?
Right now it's called John Mack.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm going to contribute. I mean, this is...
Thank you, Alan. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, and so people can contribute whatever they want to. And,
absolutely.
If everyone who had bought John's book or heard about John's book or would contribute something, I think you'd have a movie there. So
absolutely.
Good luck. And
thank
maybe
you,
I'll see you at the Thank you, Denise. Maybe I'll see you at the Joshua Tree gathering in this August. Is that something you might want to go out to, this UFO gathering in the desert?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to look further into that. Sounds great.
Look further into it, and I'm going to be emceeing there. I'd love to show this little 5-minute trailer you put together about the movie, and people like Stephen Bassett will be there, and Richard Dawkins and David Jacobs. And Linda Moulton Howe will be there, and Joshua Tree. So the main UFO researchers will be there, and I'm sure they're in support of this film because, of course, it makes them look good, you know.
Oh, Steve Bassett has been great. He's definitely a friend of the production. And so many people around the world are supportive of the production. So,
Linda Moulton Howe? Have you talked to Linda?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
Oh, she told a great story about her talking to John at Lawrence Rockefeller's ranch in the 90s. About this whole ability to telecommunicate with the aliens. And she has a great story about this army soldier that met one of these ETs. And she tells John this story about this level of communication. He somehow says, yeah, we're not ready to meet these beings collectively. That's what she says, he says. So, I mean, that was in the 90s, but I think we are ready, and I think a film like this prepares the ground for new possibilities. So,
exactly. You've got that right. Thank you, Alan. So appreciate it.
Okay, so, yes, you can go to Make Magic Motion Picture, right?
And, John Mack Movie. John Mack Movie.
Right, but the other thing, just your website, if they want to see clips of John, makemagicproductions.com is also your website too, right?
Right, uh-huh.
Okay. And then there's great clips of John there, and of course the book Abduction by John, Human Encounters with Aliens, and his last book that he wrote on the subject, Passport to the Cosmos, which was a much more spiritually based book.
Yes, wonderful. And for $50, we send it to you on our campaign. It's a wonderful gift. It's his definitive word on the phenomenon, and it's a really deep spiritual book and really provocative.
Just that one, you know, you end your website with like 10 days before his death, he said, if anyone asks, tell them I'm not crazy. What do you think he meant? He knew he wasn't crazy. I mean, that's not exactly his legacy. I mean, why?
Well, he knew he wasn't crazy, but other people thought he was crazy. So I think it's heart-wrenching, that quote, when you think about it. But here's this esteemed man saying to a friend, if anybody asks, tell them I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want his legacy to be that everyone thinks he's crazy. You know, going to be down the line whenever he's going to be considered not only crazy, but like we said, a modern day Galileo.
Right. And I think you're right. That's why your film has to have the kind of integrity and intelligence and non-sensationalness that shows who John really was as a intelligent, aware, questioning human being.
And exactly.
And someone who opened the door to another realm. So thank you again, Denise, for being on the program.
Sure. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Okay. I've been talking to Denise. Bye-bye. David Williams, the producer of the upcoming movie, John Mack. And it's about the life of the Harvard professor of psychiatry, John Mack, who investigated the true stories of, and actually in June, I'm going to be doing a whole series of talks with different UFO researchers for the conference that's coming up in Joshua Tree called Contact in the Desert. That's August 8th, 9th, and 10th. And if you go to contactinthedesert.com, www.thewayofthewild.com. You can see the lineup of speakers there. And I'm sure people will be talking about John Mack there. So thanks for listening tonight. My name is Alan Steinfeld. And if you want to reach me, you can go to my website, newrealities.com. You can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks. Good night.